In the Ecclesiastes, you may want to just hold your finger there a moment and go back over to chapter 12 to keep in mind. The statement in verse 1, remember thy create now, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. And then skipping down to verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So you want to just keep that in mind. As you're looking at God giving you an understanding of planet Earth. And if you leave God out, life is absolutely, your existence on planet Earth is meaningless. Absolutely useless if there's no God. So that's the point. People don't want to know that, of course. And thus, people don't want to think like that. So God uses Solomon in a most wonderful way with all of his marvelous wisdom to be exercised in a way that allows him to look to God. And then the next minute, from wisdom, the wisdom of looking to God to the wisdom of foolishness in order to verify, in order to prove something. Thus, and God allows that. So when you come, in other words, God allowed Adam and Eve to sin. God didn't have to do that. God could have stopped that. But it wouldn't prove anything. God was after something. And thus, God being after it, he went and allowed them to sin in order to prove, to bring forth, to bring out his wonderful character and conduct. God allowed the removal of the city of Jerusalem by the Babylonians and then by Titus to bring forth an understanding. It isn't in the physical building. And everything is expendable in the light of what God is after. So you think something's expendable, and God said, no, that's why the Bible disappeared. Bible is disappearing, actually, for all the copies we have. So here is Ecclesiastes, and Solomon begins, remember, with the subject. He said, I'm going to use my wits, my wisdom, my education. And so when we come to verse 16, he's going to tell you his capacity. Remember now, he's saying, education, I want you to know, if anyone knows and understands, I do. So, listen to me. Like going to a school where the professors are the best in the world. There's no one that knows more than they do in the subject. And here is King Solomon. So when we come to verse 16, I communed with mine own heart. Solomon is going to look at his own within himself. And lo, I am come to great estate. I have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I had a marvelous, marvelous reservoir, a marvelous ocean, if you would, of understanding, an ocean of understanding. That's something. Wow. Thus, in his capacity, having, as it were, an ocean of understanding, verse 17, he's going to say, I'm going to tell you I pursued this knowledge. I gave my heart to know wisdom, to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation, chasing the wind, going after the wind, chasing the wind. It's vexation of spirit. I had wisdom, I exercised madness and folly, and I understood it was all vexation of spirit. And the very opposite, I strove after it. I sought satisfaction, I sought enjoyment. I sought to find out how safe can I be in the order of things, in the light of understanding. How much will my understanding help me? How much will it give me the satisfaction, the safety that I need being on planet Earth. So when we come to verse 18, remember now he's looking for wisdom. He's exercising wisdom. Probably just to preempt, to go ahead of that, hold your finger there, and go over to Genesis. And let me just remind you, Genesis chapter 3. And remember now, the devil's scheme was to get the Adam and Eve, or humans at the time, to be jealous, covetous of God's position as God. So if we can look to God, God is, we can't change God. We can try to, though, be higher up on the totem pole, and that God, we really, you have to recognize us as almost a little better than being a created creature. We're a little better than that, and we try to elevate our humanity. And so the devil came along with that in mind, because that's what the devil did, try to elevate his position. So here in Genesis chapter 3, I would remind you in verse 5, "For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be open, and ye shall be as gods," remember Elohim, God, but there are no gods yet in that sense. There's no one thinking gods, no religion. "Knowing good and evil," knowing good and evil, you'll be able to know good and evil. So here's God over here, as it were, and you can be over there and know good and evil. Really? You can know good and evil and be all right. Really? That's his plan. Now, in the knowledge of good and evil, would you pick up with me in chapter 3? Again, going over to verse 17. "And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hath eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow thou shalt eat of it all the days of thy life." So your general daily existence has just been cursed. Should have been blessed. It's cursed. And, verse 18, "Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return." And remember in verse 16, childbirth, pain, labor, heartache, headache. It's not going to come out. You wanted to be wise. You wanted to be on the apart from God. Apart from God is nothing but heartache and sorrow. So all of life, you leave God out, the personal God. You leave him out. Out of a personal relationship, you got a zero, meaningless. Thus, he's going to prove it. It's a waste of time. Your heartache, cursed is the ground, cursed you're in a body, you're in a body that's made of dust, is dust, going to dust. Now what kind of advantage is that? Now, back over to Ecclesiastes, if you would. Keeping that in mind, a very sobering, we had the film The Privileged Planet, which sort of helps with that. We'll try to add to that. Help with that, and let's look out through the Milky Way, out between the open space, the only place in the galaxy that's open, and let's look up and see what's there. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and in the light of that, verse 18, For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. So in the process, the more wisdom you get, the greater the problem. the greater the problems come, and they just get more. Now, just think when you were little, small, and you had a certain amount of experience, your world was in the dimensions of the four walls, really. There's no such thing as Europe. There's no such thing as Islam. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist. So here's your little world. And the little world is very comfortable, basically. There's things in it that upset, and we struggle in that little world. And we have, as it were, think of a puzzle, we have 10 pieces. And we struggle with the 10 pieces. My doll broke. Except I can't find my truck, etc. Well, here we are. Now, we're going to grow older, and we're going to increase the puzzle pieces to 20 pieces. And then we're going to get older, increase it to 300 pieces. And then we're going to get older, decrease it to 5,000 pieces. Now, here you are, same person. You're trying to handle all these pieces. And the more pieces you have, the more pieces you have to what? Handle, don't you? If you only had 10 pieces, that's all you can worry about is 10, right? If you got 100, you can worry about 100 pieces. If you got 5,000, you got 5,000 to choose from. The more pieces you have, the more you know, the more heartache and sorrow it is. Now, that's true in life. We try to share that. Anyone that is anywhere doing anything, it determines after a while, when you're all done, when you've learned, and you've learned, and you relearned, and learned again, and unlearned, and learned again, and learned some more, when you're all done, you have to learn some more. And whatever your learning is, it's always insufficient. It doesn't answer anything. It doesn't answer. You could be a super brilliant nuclear something. But how do you do, how do you handle your heartache and sorrow and headache and cancer or anything else? What good did it be? What good is it? You've got all of this knowledge, all of this skill. You're a brilliant dentist. And you've got a mouth full of abscess, body, and you're dying, make believe. What good did it do you? Do doctors die? Is anyone immune? No matter what you know or don't know, you aren't immune from it. What are you trying to say? God said, all right. The devil said, you can know good and evil. God said, all right, go ahead. I want you to know, without me, you've got this big zero. No matter how you do it, everything that's good isn't so good. So the more you know, there's more grief, vexation, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. The more you have to worry about, the more you have to deal with. Just think of you, I'll do it another way that you know, that you're familiar with. Just think now, here you are, you have your little world, right? Which you have your little worlds. They're little. I know they're big to you, but they're little. They're little worlds. And there's certain things in your life that work, home, school, play, friends, family, foes, all the things. You got it. That's a little world. Your little world. Now, what would happen if we moved you into a setting where you're having to deal, and there are many, many people in it, that have to now not only deal with their little world, but it got a little bigger because they're involved in big, big things. They're involved in, make-believe they're involved in the World Bank. Make-believe they're involved in the UN. Make-believe they're involved in NATO. Make-believe they're sitting there, CIA agent, with 5 million things going on. Wow. Do you know the world is just getting more complex, doesn't it? The more you know, the more you have to be involved in, the more you're responsible for, wow, wow. The more you know, there is greater sorrow. The more you understand, the more you're involved, the greater the sorrow. It's the way it is. It's the way it should be. Vexation, it describes the anger of a person, the anger a person feels when something undeservedly happens to them. A pain felt when things go wrong, fallen, flawed, defective humanity. Understood. We understand it. It isn't a pleasant thing to understand the limitation, the littleness. And knowing more, the more we know increases knowledge and increases more sorrow, and it keeps going and going and going and going, and we just don't get out of it. We don't get free of it. So now, when you come in the light of education, you know, when you do all the education and use all the laws and all the science and all the medicine, and when you're all done with everything, you're right back to square one. To what measure did it truly, truly help you understand why you're here, where you're going, and change anything about what's happening to you? You're dying, aren't you? You're dying. So when everything's done, you're moving on planet Earth as a passenger, a new passenger on the Earth. You're going to disappear the same as all the other passengers did. They're all gone. So when you're all done, when you're all done saying and thinking and doing, you come up against a great wall. Education hits the wall, and they can't get past the wall to understand. And you'll pick that up with just one more time quickly in verse 15. In verse 15, you'll note, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting, lacking, cannot be numbered. In other words, a lot of things you don't know, and God doesn't tell you. And you have no way to know them. You have no way to know them whatsoever. You just don't know. Oh, God, if we could just find out. But you can't find out. God said there's no way for you to know them. So now we're stuck. We're stuck with something we need to know. We think we should know it, but we don't know it. Wow. Boy, that puts us in a terrible place. Now, one other thing while we're here. Go with me, please, over to 1 Peter 3, just for a moment. I'm coming back here. Just want to get, so where this, what are you trying to, God wrote this, God gave this wonderful book, His word to help us. And thus, in 1 Peter 3 and verse 18, you'll notice, please, for Christ also hath once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, the reason that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened and made alive by the Spirit of God, to bring us to God. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Eternal life is a unique relationship to who I am. Over and over and over again. To get us to God. Without God, you got a zero. Now, with that in mind, over to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And now we're going to go, and he said, well, since education didn't do it, so now what's the next thing? Well, let's try. Education is vanity, vexation of spirit. That doesn't mean you don't learn, you don't study, you do. The more you do, we've shared it, the more you do, the more you know you don't know. It's hard to know what you don't know till you study enough to discover what you don't know. So we're trying to help you. So in your study, be of good cheer. If you're learning anything, you're learning how much you don't know. And when you know what you think you know, you have to relearn it, rethink it, re-understand it, and start all over again and go further. So what a predicament it is. So here's, if in education doesn't work, well then how about entertainment? And thus we have, as you know, chapter 2 and in verse 1, you'll notice it says, I said in mine heart, I said to myself, come now, it's a command, come now, I will prove, I will put to the test, and it's intensive, to do it with great zeal, great diligence, great vigor, to prove, to divide by separation, to penetrate, to examine, to understand, to put to the proof, to put on trial, to authenticate. I will prove, I said in mine heart, go now, come now, go do it. I will prove thee with mirth. I'm going to put this to the test. I'm going to use mirth, gaiety. The word is joy. You'll see it in chapter 2, verse 10. And whatsoever mine eyes desire, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. Now slide your eye back over to chapter 2, verse 1. And mirth, joy, gaiety. I will prove, put to the test with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure or good. And that's good. That means good things. There's all kinds of nice things in life, good things in life. So let's go and pursue happiness, joy. And let's not do bad things. Let's look at good things, nice things, reasonable things. Let's look at them to see if we can find an answer, if there can be any help, any hope. I will make a test of pleasure, of goodness. I'll make a pleasure of it. And here we're looking at rejoicing, mirth, and it answers folly. In other words, instead of being foolish, let's be happy and pursue the right things. Let's go and do it. Therefore, enjoy, in verse 1, enjoy pleasure or goodness, pleasantness, agreeableness. Let's go do that. And in the process of doing that, behold, this is also vanity. If I pursue joy in the earthly sense to make me happy, if I pursue that, and I go for that, and I'm trying to overcome gloom, I don't want to be gloomy, I want to be joyous. Well, that's certainly profitable, trying to be joyous in a human sense, trying to look for good things as opposed to bad things in life, and you try to do that, and that certainly is reasonable. But when you're all done, the joy disappears, and the good thing was never good enough. Just wasn't good enough. I got a better job, but it wasn't good enough. And I had more money, but that wasn't good enough. And I took the right medicine, but that isn't good enough, you see. I have this, and that isn't good enough. And so it doesn't work. And it only deepens the realities that we face. It's like the digging for gold, you know. You dig and dig and dig and dig and search and search and search, and some people find gold, and then so they find gold, and then most people don't find any gold, and you keep hoping and hoping and hoping and hoping that what you found, gold, you hope it's good enough. It isn't good enough. You keep looking for gold and you can't find it, and you get tired and you lose hope. You lose hope of trying to find it. And so here is Solomon's course, his conduct. He's claiming to look to God. He's claiming to try to do it apart from God. And he's thinking, he's not a Stoic, you know. He fails as a Stoic. As an Epicurean here, he's looking, you know, if I just have the enjoyments of life, then it will... If I satisfy my appetites, my passions, my desires, my dreams, even with goodness, where will I be left? And behold, this also, verse 2, is vanity. So in the process of enjoying mirth, joy, looking, pleasure, goodness, and to try to make the best of a hopeless situation, you try to do it. Then we come to verse 2, and we have a rhetorical question again. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? So that's the little question. What does it do? Well, the answer to each thing is negative. It doesn't do anything. it doesn't help me at all, no matter what I do. And so now in the process, I have a sin nature, and the devil is feeding the sin nature with the world, with pleasure, with every allurements, attractions. I'm getting caught up trying to make life tolerable, better from a human standpoint. And from a biblical standpoint, that is a little bit too much. You'll catch that tonight a little bit, I hope. You'll catch that. It isn't in our thinking today. Anywhere, hardly. We don't want to know the truth. We don't want to know. We don't even believe there is any truth. Is there a real God? How real is he? How real, really, is God? How real? And that's, then just go outside, go out in the world. Very, very, so here we are, then looking, we're putting everything to the test, and it's going to be vanity, short-lived, nothing to hold on to, leaves us empty-handed, unsatisfied heart. There's no contentment. So what are we going to do? Well, we can look to laughter in verse 2. I said of laughter, it is mad. And the word mad means to laugh, scorn, mock, laugh. And interestingly enough, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, just to pick up the thought. What is the purpose? Laughter, it's better to laugh than to, it's no quite a funny thing, funny, be happy. The trouble is, it doesn't last. It can't keep doing it. You can't keep laughing. You can't keep hearing a funny story. You can't go through a funny experience. It ends. It ends. It's short-lived. Boom. Stop. What do we do? Well, God said, listen, you said you wanted to do it without me. Life's a wonderful thing. I've given it all for you to enjoy. But without me, all your enjoyment will never succeed. Never, never in this life. And that's a great lesson. And you don't want to have to become 100 years old to find that. If I had children, I would tell them, I said, listen, I want you to learn and study and do everything you can, the best you can, but I want you to know that in and of itself, it is vanity, and it will do you no good, no matter how much you learn, no matter how much you know, no matter how far you rise in society, you get the Nobel Prize, it won't do you any good. So that doesn't mean you don't do it. Just means that you aren't counting on it. So here in chapter 7, picking up, if I may, in verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter, there's your word, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. Sorrow is better than laughter. If I can, I'll read the little section to get to verse 6. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of birth. So the greater lesson is at the funeral. The greater lesson is that here's the person that had all of this and all of that, and they're dead. They're dead. Now what? They're dead. So what? Now when you did it all, thought it all, said it all, you end up, where are you going to get your education? At the funeral. You aren't going to get it at the party. You aren't going to get it with all the system out there. Verse 5, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. So we can laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. But the last laugh belongs to God. And you know, God looks down from heaven at the final human battle of Armageddon, the last phase of that. God looks down from heaven and he laughs. He said, what a funny sight. All of these people are coming to fight me. all of these people are coming to eliminate me. All of these people are coming to eliminate my little Jerusalem. It's a rather funny thing, you know. It'd be like, though ants are extremely, extremely strong. I forget how many hundred times weight they can carry their own weight. I forgot how much it is. And in the process, ants are extremely strong. And if I had a little ant sitting up here, I hope I don't, a little ant sitting up here, and the little ant shook his little doojiggy at me, you know, and he said, "I'm getting you, I'm getting you." And I said, "Really? You're getting me? Uh-huh, I'm getting you. I'm going to get you. Do you really think you can do that?" "Oh, I do, and I've gathered other ants to get you." Now, and I think that's rather humorous, wouldn't you? Or unless you're afraid of ants, and the ant will cause you to run. But that took care of the ant, didn't it? Took care of the ant. God said, "Listen, it's a rather funny thing that you all want to do what you do. Don't you know you aren't going to win? It's an absolute ridiculous thing you do." So, laughter. We don't want to. Back over to chapter 2. Laughter, the sport, the activity of laughing. As much as it exists, as much as it is. I said of laughter, it is mad. Derangement. It's not profitable. It's not profitable at all in any way, shape, or form. I get no pleasure from this at all. Thus, if I can, in verse 3, "I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainted mine own heart with wisdom, yet acquainting my own heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, foolishness, till I might see what was the good," what was that good, back up to the word pleasure in verse 1, "good pleasure for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life." I'm going to go, what's wrong? Pleasure? Pleasure doesn't, there's vanity. Laughter is vanity. And drinking, I'm going to drink in order to get it. I'm going to try to get relief and get a drink. And that's vanity. I'm going to go and pursue it with all my heart. I'm going to go and look for, if I can, this kind of exercise. And in the process of it, it is madness, folly, useless, plunging myself into madness. I see the better, he said, but I pursue the worst. And so here he is looking, and wine doesn't work, and his vanity, and laughter doesn't work, and pleasure doesn't work. Wow, none of it works at all. Wine can stimulate, you know, and stir the flesh, and take control of the heart and mind. It does. Wine can drive, lead the heart to look for results, looking for some benefit from drinking, but you don't get any. You don't get any at all. None. Caught up, going nowhere. And so here's the failure of pleasure, entertainment. It all doesn't work. Verse 4, I'm going to now go from entertainment, I'm going to go to material things. "I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards." I really get into it. And that's why, you know, when you read Solomon, Solomon built the temple, and then he built palaces. Then he built gorgeous buildings for all kinds of women. He built and planted. He had all a zoo like no other on the face of the earth. Wow. And it was all vanity. "Thus, I made me great works," verse 4, "building me houses, I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens or orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. No one equaled what I did where I was. Queen of Sheba would come to see if it was all true. Thus I gathered me also silver and gold and peculiar treasure of kings and of provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments of all sorts. I had great symphonies, and I had great instruments. I had animals, I had everything you could speak of. You name it, and I had it. I did it. I pursued it. Verse 9. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And that was the difficult part. I knew where I was and what I was doing, but I was caught in what I was doing. I was caught up in my mood, caught up in my manner, caught up in my movement. I was caught and carried. And the world and the system and the devil and everyone kept me going. Nothing was enough. But everything, when it was all done, was vanity. Verse 10. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, pleasure, mirth. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. I put it all together. I did everything, had everything that I ever could dream of, wanted in abundance. Verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought. I got up on one of the high buildings and looked around the city and looked at everything. I looked at all of that I accumulated. I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. I gained absolutely nothing. I was in a dying body, and all that I had and all that I wanted and all that I dreamed, as long as it was coming in, it occupied me. As soon as it had arrived at my heart, it was nothing. It left me with nothing at all. Nothing. How old do you have to be before you get there to learn that? What are you trying to say? Without God, you're stuck. Abraham had, you know, that's the first place the word glory is used with Abraham. And Abraham had his wealth. And God blessed Abraham with huge abundance. Not like Solomon, a different way. He had all kinds of animals and all kinds of, he only had 318 trained servants. But he had all kinds of everything. When you looked, the area, the plain, was full of animals, sheep and camel and goats and livestock. Wow. He was rich. But you know, he never said, and he never had a guard. He never had a fence. And he was in the middle of the enemy's camp, the Philistines. And he never, where they were, the enemy was going to be there, would be there, was there. And in the process of all of that, he never did that. He just looked to God. Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness and wealth. And God blessed him. God blessed the man. Solomon, what are you doing? You're trying to tell us that if we don't look to God, all that we have is not going to be enjoyed. It isn't going to be profitable. We may be occupied with getting it and doing it and having it, a new this and a new that. And I'm going to be. What are you going to be? Why the enthusiasm? What are you after? What's going on? Well, I'm going to make it. I'm going to arrive. I'm going to have what I never had. Really? Really? Now, thus in verse 12. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? even that which hath been already done. In other words, anyone that follows me can never do more than I'm doing at all. Verse 13, then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth light, darkness. I gained nothing. I saw that wisdom didn't. Verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceive that also that one event happeneth to them all. Verse 15, then said I in my heart, as it happened to the fool, happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, that this also is vanity. So here I had my wisdom, here I had my position, here I had my power, possessions, privileges. And the guy down the road who had none of them, I'm no better off than he is. In fact, he may be better off than I am. Because here I am struggling with stuff, and he isn't even conscious of it. We're in the same lot. We're of dust and going to dust. What on earth did we gain? What on earth did we gain? Thus, verse 16, for there is no remembrance of the wise more, of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which is net with that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? What is there to gain when you had it all? Now, how many people do you think lived on planet Earth that have died? How many people that ever lived, starting with Adam and Eve, that died? Do you think there's a lot of them? A lot of them. Now, how many do you know? How many are in the phone book? How many are anywhere? They're all gone. They're all gone. Say, well, I'm going to be noted. Well, I'm going to have a street name for me. Well, that's one way to do it, have a street name. But Psalm 30, whatever tells us, Psalm 39, that it won't do you any good to have a street name for you because that's all you've got. You're no better off than a dog. You died. So what did you gain? Now, in the light, the point, getting the point, if the God's trying to... Verse 17. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, it's a frustrating thing if I don't find some answers. When I have everything and do everything, where am I when it's all done? I'm no different than anyone else who never had anything. Verse 18, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored. And you know who took over? Rehoboam took over all of that wonderful, wonderful place. And Rehoboam didn't have any inkling of what to do. And he went and followed the wrong way, wrong suit, wrong direction. And it ended up, he could have had a wonderful, wonderful privilege of being king. But he ended up in a divided kingdom. And he wanted, who's going to get it? Well, no one gets it. Think of the businesses. You work so hard to make your business go and make it work and make it survive, and then the children come along sometime, or people, mostly family, come along and they inherit or try to get it after you die, and they don't care about it. They don't care. Do you know you could have some very precious things in your repertoire of possessions, could you? Things that you value? They're very meaningful to you, very meaningful to you. And you know, if you die, are they going to be meaningful to somebody else? You know. How much? They aren't going to be meaningful. Not likely, you know. Anyway, you can get all that, and when you're all done, you've got nothing. Nothing at all. Therefore, verse 19, And who knoweth whether it should be wise man or fool? This is vanity, the end of the verse. Verse 20, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. It's discouraging. Verse 21, for there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in or with equity, skill, success it is. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. They had no interest in understanding, doing, carrying it on. Verse 22. For what hath man of all his labor and of all his vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief. You brought nothing in, you bring nothing out. I told you, when you're all done in those last minutes, you've got nothing at all. If you don't have God, you've got nothing. For all the days, verse 23, are sorrow, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. There is no vanity. There is no relief. There is no out. A better security system to protect us. More security, more this, more that. And when you're all done, what kind of protection do you really have? You try to protect yourself, but in protecting yourself, with nothing wrong with that, protecting yourself, you're actually checking how well are you able to protect yourself? How good is the alarm system? See, is the person at the other end having a coffee break? Is he going his 45 different panels and there's two of them looking and one's talking to the other looking and no one's looking at your panel, you see. And I'd worry about that, wouldn't you? I mean, that's what you're paying for. You got the thing. Didn't you get the system so you could worry about it? See? And then you went and got something else. I hope the gun works. I hope I can shoot straight. Hope I can shoot fast enough. Well, you may or may not. When you're all done, God said, listen, I'm pretty good at taking care of things, you know, and I don't quite need anything, you know. So if you try to do it without me, you're going to be one scaredy cat and trying to make your life work. Thus, if I can, Verse 24, I won't even read it. We'll stop. Anyway, I trust you got a little bit. It's a great, great book. It's a sobering, wonderful exercise. Thank you.